Hey everybody, welcome to My RP Movies. This week, we talk Kevin Costner in Waterworld. Now, on top of this being an oft-requested, oft-thought-about episode because of its notoriety as a film, and the fact that it cost almost $250 million to make in 1995 money, this is a big day because we have hit episode 400. A big one. Which on top of that and Disremembered and Myopia Mornings and The Twilight Zone. We have over 500 hours of material, and it's all because of you. We appreciate all you do for us. We appreciate that you have chosen to spend your time with us for the last 9 years almost. And we, just thanks everyone. Bye guys, and enjoy.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. Welcome to episode number 400.
Woo!
Yeah, we talk about one of the biggest flops in movie history, which I have a sneaking suspicion Matt kind of liked. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, and Riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we have got...
Hello, this is Daniel. I've contributed to popdose.com in the past. Check out some of my past stuff there. Happy to be here for 400, and this... Waterworld is making my legs chafe.
Author Matthew W. Quinn, check out my new book, Serpent Sword, the sequel to my steampunk military fantasy Battle for the Wastelands. Copies printed like a week ago.
Let me just say, he's got a copy of this book right here in front of him, and it looks sturdy, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it looks
like a good read.
Is it thick, how they pronounce these days?
Well, sales just dropped substantially. No, so is it pre-order or is it actually out? Because this is coming out in like 6 days.
Yeah, it's actually been out at this point for about a week.
All right. Oh, good. How are sales doing?
Pretty good. I haven't had a month this good in years.
Good. So help contribute to Matt's best month in years. And speaking
yes.
of, episode 400, gentlemen, well done. this is Kevin Costner's, directed by question mark Kevin Reynolds, I think.
Have we done a Kevin Costner movie before?
This might be the first, and
Holy
his hair's
shit.
Looking mighty thin in this.
Yes.
It's not only a huge, I think the reviews were mixed, but it was a financial disaster.
Yeah, well, it was one of the top grossing movies that year, but I think a typhoon destroyed the set and they had to rebuild it. So some scuttlebutt was that was a third of the budget was building the sets a second time.
No, it's one of those things where it's like, well, technically it made a profit when you count all the overseas stuff, but it just barely squeaked by a profit because it costs at the time so much to make. Like they sank Marvel MCU movie money into this.
Yeah, I saw it when it came out in theaters. I was probably about 10, and I remember from that time people talking about how expensive it was.
You saw this in theaters when it came out?
Yes.
Holy shit, we got to go more into that. Was it a well-attended screening?
I can't remember. I just saw it with my dad.
Yeah, because, okay, so by accounts, it cost $172 million to make. Plus, they advertised the hell out of it, costing... what was this, 96?
95.
Yeah, I was in fourth grade, so it had to be 95.
That means it cost $235 million in that money.
Yeah, it's 175 in 95 money, which never happened.
No, I mean, because again, we're used today to movies that make $1 billion. Back then, that did not
never.
Happen. Like, it's...
Everyone thought Titanic would be a big disaster until that made $1 billion, and it was the first time that had ever happened.
And that didn't cost this much.
It actually cost a little over it, but that's why they were predicting it'd be the next big disaster, is because this is more expensive than Waterworld? What the hell is James Cameron doing?
And it's also set in water. And by the by, just adjusted for inflation, because that matters, that was $478 million in today's money.
He's got the little Dr. Evil pinky up to his mouth as he says that.
But I mean, just by note, like, that's as much as, like, Endgame, Civil War, and Infinity War cost combined to make.
Yeah.
Like, that is so much money for, once again, Dennis Hopper to look like an idiot and yell at things.
Dennis Hopper is having so much fun in this movie. It's great.
His definition of fun after he got sober was not anyone else's definition of
fun. No, although I will say, he's just playing King Koopa from Super Mario Brothers again. It's the same exact performance.
With bad puns about his eye.
I mean, and the other part of it is this little kid and the woman co-star are terrible.
Oh, the little kid grows up to be Deb from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, that's
and,
fine.
And previous episode, Alice in Wonderland, the TV version, the TV she was version. Alice.
She's fine. The characters are terrible.
Oh, yeah.
All they do is complain. All they do is screw things up and ruin Kevin Costner's life.
The main character's pretty damn terrible. He's an absolute jackass to everyone he meets, and he is open to murdering children.
Yeah.
Throughout this entire thing, until suddenly he's not?
Yeah, the dad swimming montage is really long.
Well, and it just, none of it matters. I can't get over how much of this movie is just grab ass until meaningless action scenes that go for 20 minutes. This movie is just such an ungodly mess. And this, if you don't
know, I say.
What?
I liked it, yeah.
All right.
Fine. Oh.
You were correcting your prediction, Nick.
I told you. I will say, too, the problem here is Kevin Costner ego. He notoriously seizes control of movies, locks out the production, and then re-edits stuff.
Well, he did back in the day because he could get away with it. Now, well...
Now he openly does it. Written by, directed by, and starring Kevin Costner.
Now he's got that documentary series on whatever Fox News' streaming service is about visiting national parks. So maybe he's still doing it, but it's on a much lower scale.
But, like, what was it, previous, or one of his films from earlier, Robin Hood Men, Prince of Thieves.
I was about to say Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Which was also directed by Kevin Reynolds,
sure.
Who's not really a person, I don't think. But it was very, like, Kevin Costner locked the director out of the editing bay. It came out differently than he thought it would, but that's just who he is. Kevin Costner's an egomaniac, and that's this movie as well, right?
I heard Open Range was good. That was another one of the written by, directed by, and starring Kevin Costner movies.
Well, the thing that I think really killed Kevin Costner wasn't even necessarily this movie. It was the fact Dances with Wolves beat Goodfellas for Best Picture, but it did because that was a much bigger hit. Like, that was huge back in the day. And then he just kept kicking himself with this, and then the movie he did right after this was The Postman.
The Postman, yeah, that was like 3 hours long.
And that was one that he actually did direct. And
right.
It was a colossal bomb and got super panned critically, even though it was supposed to be his next big epic, and that's what really killed him.
Yeah, there was a big gap between The Postman and Open Range.
Yeah.
That he was in like some direct-to-video monster movie based on a short story I read once.
Well, let's see. I know he's on he's on the television now, and what is it, Yellowstone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and like, and then he was in that Hatfield McCoy show about 6 years ago as well, and like...
He was in that Sam Raimi baseball movie. Do you remember that, For Love of the Game?
For Love of the Game, which is funny because one of his most famous films is also a baseball movie, which is Bull Durham, which is, I think, a Criterion movie as well.
At this point it is. Oh, right after Waterworld, he did Tin Cup. Which was another big thing.
Was that any good?
I've never seen it.
I've seen it. It's fine.
Oh, he also did, and I actually did see this one in theaters when it came out, 13 Days. Do you remember that about the Cuban Missile Crisis?
I saw that in theaters, too. I thought it was good.
It's fine. Yeah, it's perfectly fine.
I mean, it's...
Bruce Greenwood playing JFK in that movie is very good.
Yeah, I think so. And he plays, like, the chief of staff or something.
Kenny O'Donnell.
Yeah. And, I mean, like... The only thing that was weird about that movie to me was it felt like a made-for-TV movie on scale. I was just thinking about it. He can't get away from the Kennedys, can he?
No.
Because he was in that JFK movie. Did he also direct JFK? No, he didn't. That was Oliver Stone.
That was Oliver Stone.
Oof. I mean, I'd say that's a stay tuned, but then I'd have to sit down and watch it.
I will say...
Is it 3 hours long?
Oh,
it's longer
big time.
Than that. It's
it's like
3:15.
The director's cut's close to 4.
And it's the one where it's Joe Pesci as that guy with alopecia.
David Ferry.
Yeah, there he is. That's,
what the fuck is going on? You want me to kill Kennedy? I'm not going to kill fucking Kennedy. What's he ever done to me?
Oh, that's so awesome. That movie is nuts.
Actual dialogue, no, it's not.
The squeakiest mobster?
No, he's not playing a mobster.
No.
David Ferry's a real person, and he's one of those dudes, if you read, like, if you start by learning about the JFK assassination by reading books in the conspiracy section or on Reddit. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He got drowned when the glaciers melted anyway.
Ooh, Joe Pesci?
Yeah.
Did they ever explain exactly how this became a water world? Because
yes, there's a scroll at the beginning. This is a message movie about global warming. Okay, Matt, you probably got this. Give me the plot synopsis.
All right, this is something I remember when it first came out. The Universal logo, you see the yes, ocean yes, growing and slowly swallowing all the land.
That's how you know it's a blockbuster, because they fucked with the logo.
Which, there is not enough ice in the Arctic and Antarctic to cover the entire planet.
Are
so,
you saying this movie has plot holes?
No, the novelization, yes, there's a novelization. I'll see if I can find it.
Oh, my God.
Involving an ice comet or something, because you have to have much more water to make this work.
Wait a minute. No, no. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I will not stop. Okay. Not yet.
Is this you reading it, or is this
not
TV
yet?
Tropes?
I haven't found the book yet. It's like the junior novelization I can find. Would you have to cut out a lot to make it kid appropriate? Like, hey, our hero tries to pimp Jan Triplehorn to a crazed Irishman.
Yeah, I imagine that wasn't in the junior novelization, but oh boy.
Yeah, and so yeah, it's the world that's Waterworld. The surviving humans are living on floating junk piles called atolls, and there's various types of pirates. And Kevin Costner's got a bitchin' catamaran.
Uh-huh.
It is.
This movie is a product placement for catamarans, because his catamaran is awesome. And we start out seeing him pissing into a jar.
Yes. Nothing is a stronger choice for a movie than having your hero, Boomer Mom's favorite, Kevin Costner, urinating into a filtration system, which, pause.
I could be that filtration system.
Yeah, right. Let's start off. This movie is incredibly stupid, and the whole thing is about finding dry land, which, you know, Matt was kind of getting
to. And what in their ever creative brains did the filmmakers come up with for this name for dry earth that still exists? Dryland.
Dryland, of course. That they alternate between being the most important and least important thing in the world is drinkable water,
mm-hmm.
because they talk about these hydration units and people that what, even though he himself, the Mariner. Is his character's name, The Mariner.
They never call him by anything. Isn't it The Mariner in the credits or something?
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. I've heard there's a deleted scene somewhere where they name him Ulysses, which actually makes sense.
In the comic that goes alongside this.
You're just jealous I have the comic.
What did you read it?
No.
You can't bring up... Okay, rule for the rest of this. Unless you've actually read it, you can't bring it up anymore. I know that removes half your dialogue. No, but the point being is... How is water a problem if they have filtration far down that he can pee into something and drink it within seconds?
Time to get out our Boy Scout manuals, Nick. Solar stills. No one know how to do that?
It's very easy to distill water. It takes a while. You have to know what you're doing. But all you do is you take water. You take a big thing of water, fill it with the saline. You put a tarp over it, right? Held down with the weight in the middle. And then in the basin, in the center, you just put a cup. And then as the water evaporates up, it collects down, and you have drinkable water.
Well, didn't they have a whole episode of that science show, The Voyage of the Mimi, dedicated to solar stills?
Oh, that takes me back. So if you don't know...
Middle school.
Rather than teach people when we were kids, well, you watched YouTube videos, which back then were on cassette tapes. And there was one called The Voyage of the Mimi, which starred, I believe, a young Ben Affleck.
Yeah, he was a kid, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the kid. And it was just like the thinnest of plots about a boat at sea and the things you could learn across in basic earth sciences.
There was an old man
was his grandfather, and they sailed around.
It never existed in full color. You could only watch it as a washed out VHS tape in a science room. The second you took it to the social studies hall, it turned to dust and disappeared. But anyway, so in the year 2500,
when is man still alive? Yeah.
Man is, not very many.
Yeah, so the sea level rises 7,600 meters, and now all of Earth is underwater, except for fat people because they float.
Mm.
Yeah.
They get eaten by the CGI whale shark thing.
That thing is a lot of nonsense that happens very quickly.
Yeah. There's a lot of nonsense that happens very quickly in this, but yeah, we get the gimmicky logo, we've got the urine recycle. Here's the thing. Even at the opening scene, I didn't think that this was going to work properly. And I don't think I hate this movie as much as Nick does. But what I was comparing this to the entire time was The Road Warrior. Because
this is a Mad Max movie. Yeah.
If you remember the opening to that, it's a third person narrator that briefly describes, okay, here's what happened and why the world is like this. It's like 2 minutes long. At the end of the movie, you find out it's the feral kid narrating it, whatever. But it's like, all right, so we know what's happening. We know why it's happening. We're introduced to a character, and then we get a big action scene. At the opening of this, we get three lines of dialogue just so that they can say the word Waterworld, and then we see Kevin Costner drinking his own pee.
That's right.
So is this already before, obvious what the problem is.
Is there. This before or after that dude jacks his limes?
This is before. This is the literal opening thing.
The first thing we see is our main character urinating.
Yeah.
Like, strong creative choice.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
We don't even understand who he is in there. It's like they don't have any dialogue about scavengers live above the water, feasting on the treasures below, or any stupid shit like that, which it would have been dumb, but it would have helped explain why I'm watching this man pee. I don't know. I mean, right from that opening, it's like somebody here has made a mistake.
Well, and something, I don't hate this movie, Matt. It's called Being in Character. This is a review show, so I'm being critical. But I will say, there must have been 6,000...
I can be critical. He's a prick.
There's 6,000 extras in this. Like, I will say, you can see where the money goes.
Oh, people were using this to get their SAG cards.
But, I mean...
Kevin Costner's throwing them to everyone. Oh, get a card. You get a card.
But at least they did it. Like, I'm sure this was, like, I know part of it was filmed in the South Pacific. As Matt said, it was hit by a major storm. Mm-hmm. But, like, the stuff they filmed in studios and stuff, like, there are people here. There's actual effect, except for that CGI Leviathan nonsense, which, again, the problem is.
And some CGI fire nonsense, too, later.
Yeah. In 500 years, monsters are not going to evolve. Right? Like, sure, there might be more sea creatures, but there aren't going to be all of a sudden, like, Mosasaurus is not going to come back to life. Like, the Loch Ness Monster is not going to be created. This is just, it's
what are
so
you talking about? The Loch Ness Monster already exists, Nick.
That's right. And he's a protected species under the endangered species.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, like, this whole thing is we're introduced to this dude played by Kevin Costner. Oh, you said Mad Max. Mm-hmm. I realize that Mad Max, okay, is Kevin Costner the American Mel Gibson?
Well, I think Mel Gibson's the American Mel Gibson.
Is he an Australian?
He is an Australian, but he's lived here a while.
I don't know. I thought he was born in America and just lived in Australia.
Oh, like he had an Australian parents and went down. Something anyway, like it's just because, like, it's funny how parallel their careers have been, like, vaguely patriotic stuff now and then, America-centric stuff. Apparently, at one point, Kevin Costner was in line to make a sequel to Passion of the Christ.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it didn't happen.
Passion 2, Passion Harder?
Well, wasn't there a Passion of the Christ sequel that came out like a couple of years ago? About Paul?
Now you bring it up, I do remember, I think, some of the people who were in it.
I think the biggest
Jim
difference
Caviezel came
is...
back as Jesus, 20 years later or whatever. A haggard Jesus.
I think the difference is Kevin Costner has never... to the best of my knowledge anyway, like, publicly yelled anti-Semitic phrases at anyone.
So that's the question. What group is he again?
Or is recorded live verbally abusing his baby mama.
Or calling a cop sugar tits.
Oh, yeah. Although I could picture Kevin Costner doing that, let's be real.
It would be a classier name, though.
Yeah. With a fake Boston accent, as per right. Kevin Costner tradition.
As is...
Park the car in the yard, sugar tits.
Yeah.
And I'm JFK, so when we're done, come to my Oval Office.
Oh, gross. That's a gross thought you had. Gross.
Kennedy, of course I'm going to do that.
He wasn't even a Kennedy in 13 Days or JFK.
No, he wasn't. In 13 Days, he was the Texas lawyer, right? He was Louisiana, New Orleans lawyer.
Well, yeah, he was. And
back
in JFK.
The left.
Back and to the left.
That's one.
All right, so in this, we get... It actually opens, like, action-wise with Costner meeting another scavenger, and then we also meet the smokers, because this is the 90s, so anti-smoking backlash was just picking up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even though this cult of smokers apparently worships the captain of the Exxon Valdez.
That's Old right. Saint Joe.
Mm-hmm. Led by the deacon, right?
Yeah.
The deacon.
That's right.
As portrayed not by Samuel L. Jackson, who was offered the role, but by Dennis Hopper.
This movie, across the board, stupid names. And I mean, I get it. It's cool that everyone kind of has a nickname. But, like, we don't even say the Mariner, which is probably the best of them. But the Deacon and the Smoker and all this stuff. There's an inventor called Grigor, which is stupid. And I was thinking in my head, I'm like, okay, so I don't care about this alternate history stuff for the most part, so I'm going to get this wrong. I guess this would kind of be Dieselpunk, because this is, you know, there's a lot of gas-powered nonsense. At least there's not a dirigible. And then there's a fucking dirigible.
How is there gas?
Yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, gasoline, I mean, to power the jet skis that the smokers... I mean, they say they can, like, somehow extract crude oil from somewhere and make gas from that. How?
Yeah, if even if they've got an old tanker, 500 years from now, it would have run out.
Well, not even run out. Gas does not keep around.
Yeah, I know that. I'm talking about if they're making from raw oil, they would have still run out.
Well, right. And if it's in the hull of this old abandoned, tanker, it's also just evaporated, right? Yeah. Like, it doesn't keep. And then, I guess, three, my favorite part of it is everything is still branded, right? Like, at one point, he just has a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I'm just like, nah, that's gone. It's been 500 years.
Well, the other thing that got me is like, okay, so the water levels are now where the tallest mountains are, which fine. Why is everybody dressed like they're in the South Pacific? Wouldn't they still be at the same altitude and still be freezing to death?
I mean, again, it's just like, well, we can't do exactly Mad Max because George Miller made Mad Max. So what if it was on water this time? Like, that's it. Because they're dressed like the people in Mad Max.
Is this the part we make a joke about? Yes, Mad Max in the water.
Yeah, there you go.
Kind of. Like, because when did Beyond Thunderdome come out? Late 80s?
85.
Yeah, okay. So this is exactly a decade after that.
And George Miller at the time was making Babe.
Academy Award nominated.
Yep.
I mean.
What Waterworld wishes it had been.
George Miller may have one of the most interesting careers in Hollywood, right? Like, from indie masterpieces to kids' movies to, like, Robin Williams-directed animated musicals, right? Because he did those Happy Feet movies. Yep. To then Mad Max Fury Road, which is one of the greatest films of all time.
Yes.
Like, unqualified, just incredible. And it's George fucking Miller. And then for 20 years, people have been trying to rip him off, and they can't get George Miller right, which, great. But it's just so funny to see how he's just like, but what if there was no Giss? Like that's kind of all it is. Oh, and then Tina Turner for no reason. But this, on the other hand.
Do we need another hero? Do we need to know the way home? This Waterworld thinks we do.
Oh, it sure does.
If home is a plateau of Tibet.
Okay, so there's like three different cuts of this movie. Matt, I assume you watched the super long one.
I just got whatever was on Amazon. Because I heard the director's cut cut out a lot of action scenes and built in more world building, which makes it sound worse.
Oh,
so okay, someone Frankensteined the two together, so we have more world building and more action, which that must be like the holy grail. I must find it.
I'm pretty sure they did, and I might or might not have a copy of it. But anyway, we won't get into Arrow Video's collections there.
Yeah, right.
Matt, put your pants back on.
That's right.
Matt, don't put your pants back on, Matthew.
Well, and I was going to say, Matt.
No.
Matthew, do not stick your hands there. We're in public. Matt, God damn it.
Podcast is over. 400 episodes and it's over. No. What I was going to say is, Matt, I'm surprised at you. The reason why I thought you would like this is when Daniel and I critique a movie, it's usually based on, I've said this before, it's usually on film theory and cinematography. You generally like a movie based on the world that it's built into, on the possibilities of that world. I'd say, if anything, this movie has incredible, like, a very interesting world that it plays in, which is why I thought you'd like it more than anything, because I thought the action is fine.
It is cool. It's just the action also makes it fun. Like, they're really doing all these action sequences, or flying down cables and swinging from things. It's not, as you would put it, CGI nonsense.
Well, and I will say, too,
it's real.
It's very Hook-esque, maybe, to me. But I agree with you. Like, the fact that there are like 600 people in some of these scenes and the action is massive. And it's also why I think Kevin Costner is kind of directing these things, because I don't know much about Kevin Reynolds, but he's not directing 700 people in a single scene. Kevin Costner is directing them, but whatever. So, like, to me, I think the world here is kind of the most interesting part. So a cut where there's more world building, I thought you'd be all about.
I would be, but not the cost of making it uber, cutting out of all the action scenes. I mean, that's why I'm saying the third cut that supposedly is the best of both worlds, that's the one I would want.
You know, that means it's like 4 hours, because this is already 2 hours and 20 minutes. So you add, easily 30 minutes of world building. And I mean, I saw this in the way God intended, which is I got a box of 50 DVDs for $20 and it was in there and it was the standard def DVD, which was like, it wasn't 4x3, but it was that weird adjusted 4x3 letterboxing you bought a DVD in like 2002.
The ones that existed because everyone was used to Blockbuster VHS. Like, why are the black bars on my TV?
Right. And so it's like kind of doing what we now think of as IMAX, but it's not. It's just a weirdly shaped screen.
Seeing this in IMAX, that would be so cool.
Would it?
I think that's the way to see it, though, because then you see the actual, like, the grit, right? It's like Avatar you either need to see on the world's largest screen or on your phone because it looks like a cartoon.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the new one yet.
I haven't either. Don't worry about it.
It's grossed $2 billion, and I met two people on the planet who've seen that movie.
Yeah, I heard it was bad.
Well, they spent $1 billion each time, so they're good. I mean, I heard it was fine. I heard it was enjoyable. I heard it was big. I mean, it has... I mean, this time the blue things actually bang, so you're
good. Oh, okay. Well, that's what I was looking for. I want to watch Smurfs fuck, but anyway.
We've all been there.
Smurfette!
Just running a 200-person train on Smurfette.
I will say this, though. The world building, especially at that first atoll where Kevin Costner shows up and they have funerals and what was that? I still don't understand what the recycling was.
Yeah, I didn't know. So they have all their waste, it looks like, because it's yellow like piss, but it's more solid. And they dump people in it and dissolve them, and then somehow they use that to grow food because they have dirt. I don't know what that is.
Well, I mean, it's at least suggesting something. I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching a little bit here. But those scenes, even if you think about them, they kind of collapse. It actually kind of does work for world building.
I mean, I have nothing wrong with the world it's building. I think a lot of it is incredibly elbowy and awkward because, well, I mean, let's just describe the first scene. He's on a trimaran, right? And what he's trying to do is he wanders the world trading dirt. So people think he knows where dry land is.
Dirt in this universe is like jewelry. And they can trade it for what's called hydro, which is fresh water.
Which is, again...
Even though filtration devices that make your pee drinkable exist, I don't know why hydro would be all that valuable.
Water, water everywhere, so let's all have a drink, right?
Thank you, Homer.
Yeah. So what they do is he's there with this kind of mason jar filled with dirt, and they see that he's a mutant, right? He has gills behind his ears.
Well,
that doesn't come out till later, because I think earlier just trying to rob him.
Well, initially, the way that comes out is a bunch of women at this atoll, like, offer themselves to him, or at least want his sperm so that they can have children. He refuses to sleep with any of them, and then somebody's thinking, okay, something's up. He's not having sex?
That's right.
And so then they capture him, and that's when they find the gills behind his ears.
They pull his ear, and you see it, and that's like the first 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
there's no reason for this movie to be 2 hours and 15 minutes long.
So much of it is repetitive. It happens on and on and on and on and on and on. Okay. So, so they decide to recycle him by drowning him in the sludge pit.
Thing is, remember we earlier talked about the smokers? The guy who he's trying to trade with, who stole all his limes, that he then sabotages his boat and leaves for the smokers, who are these seagoing bikers on jet skis.
Basically.
Turns out some of the local dickheads on the atoll are actually their spies, and guess who shows up?
He's a god, man!
That's right. So the atoll is attacked by smokers, seeking a girl named Enola.
Yes, this is the little girl. Well, actually, I was confused. I thought they were just there to initially pillage and plunder, and then they find out that this young girl may or may not have tattoos on her back.
Evil Mullet was a spy.
No. This is where you can tell scenes deleted.
Ah.
Right, like, because this screams to me, someone was supposed to look for her because there was a scene somewhere where Mullet Man sees the map, knows the map, because he's been told about the map.
Because Mullet Man, I think, was shaking down somebody at the bar. You know, was only going to share his water with him if he told him something. I think that was... And then he's obviously sneaking out of the atoll like, wink, wink, wink.
No matter what the setting is, no matter what the timeline is, no matter if this is a dystopia or not, where everything's gone, there will be a bar scene.
There is. I mean, it's got this grittiness to it, which is kind of fun. It is what it is. I like it. Meanwhile, there's this nonsense with the dirigible, which means...
Oh, yes, that... Ugh.
Well, a very eccentric Gregor is building a hot air balloon.
Because he can,
and,
yes.
And he is really obnoxious to the Mariner. Like, he's, like, always quizzing him about how he's... Oh, he got whipped. Like, he's if you're going to get into racism... He's not a mean clan type. He's more like the Weasleys. Like, oh, you're a mutant?
How long can you breathe under that?
I'm going to keep talking to you even though I'm so annoying.
I mean, this movie has enough problems with race. I don't think there's a single not white person in the entire movie, which is incredible because there's 7,000 people in this
movie. Yeah, and Enola is from the dry land, which we later find out is Mount Everest. Shouldn't she be Nepalese?
Wait a minute.
The language written on her is a Chinese-ist script. I don't know. I will also say...
Wait a minute. That's supposed to be Mount Everest? The cut I saw didn't confirm that.
That's true.
Well, tallest place on Earth, if anything, would survive.
As we record this, that Mandalorian episode came out where we see the one piece of land on Coruscant that we... ever have gotten to see.
That's right.
So I guess Waterworld really was more of an influence than we ever thought, but anyway.
Waterworld is a lot.
Okay, so yeah, right when the smokers come, which this was confusing.
Okay, wait, stop. I pulled up IMDb for a lot of reasons. I wanted to see where it was actually filmed because, God help me, the idea that there's that many white people when they filmed in Southeast Asia is funny to me. That they couldn't even get local extras. They flew people across the ocean to do this. Fine. I want you guys just to guess what the top... You know how they have those like little bubbles that like these are things people search for that this came up in? You want to guess what the five were? The top five plot lines or the first five plot keywords that this movie comes across?
I'm going to guess water.
Water's one.
Begbie from Trainspotting wants 45 minutes with the wee one.
No, I doubt
that. Pedophile is one of them.
Oh, wait, it is?
It's the third one.
Pee drinking? Is that going to come up?
That's number five.
Oh, my God. Where else do we go? From there, dry land. Is that
no,
one of
not one.
Smoking?
No.
Exxon Valdez?
No.
Why are there so many white people?
The first scene, drinking one's own urine.
Okay.
And non-consensual haircut.
You know, somebody...
It's all fetishes.
Somebody confused their old grandpa who doesn't know how to use the internet. Show them IMDb. It's like, this is Pornhub. You can search for whatever you want here. And
if I missed one, it's tomatoes was the other one. So it's literally non-consensual haircut is number one.
Oh, that scene where he's like after...
He's hacking her hair off. Yeah. Then water, then pedophile, then tomato, then drinking one's own urine.
Never shoot a man's harpoon gun at Jack Black without permission.
Yeah, because Jack Black is in this movie.
He is. He's doing good. And it's filmed off the coast of Hawaii, so there you go.
I read this book, and I might still have the copy of it. It might be my storage unit at this point. But from what I recall about that... there was a whole bunch of animosity because the crew and all the extras were staying in absolute squalor and just bad things. But Kevin Costner had like the 17-room villa on the coast of Hawaii with his own personal chef, and he'd be ferried to the set every day. And it's like, you know, and they were all thinking, you know what? Fuck Kevin Costner.
Yeah, no, I get that. I believe that he was an asshole on this set.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Also, every time he gets wet and he comes out of the water, his hair looks so funny and thin. Like, the man is... He's holding on to that last piece of dignity with all of his life, with both hands. And I respect him for it, but it looks real cheap.
Yeah.
His ripped hands. Like, it seems like a lot of shots this movie are designed to just show him off, like, leaning out on his boat.
I mean, he looks fine. He looks good. He's in good shape, but it's...
Look at my biceps.
Matt was flexing his biceps and, you know, looking
good. Hey, kid at the gym asked me how I got swole.
You brought that up on the last four episodes, I think. Mm. I don't know. Are you swole, Matt? How much do you lift?
I never tried to max out.
How much do you bench? How much you bench?
How many cycles do you do before the gym?
I do 25. I do 5 of 5 at my max, which right now is 180. I leg press about 550.
All right.
Yeah, it's good.
Dude.
Yeah, it's good.
My genitals are all shrunken.
One day I will be Pa Kent.
Oh, yes, he was indeed Pa Kent. Good Lord.
One day I'll let myself be killed by a tornado to prove to prove my conviction.
Oh, dude, that's so stupid. That movie, my next season, will be 10 years old, 2014. Not good.
Oh, Man of Steel?
I think that's Dawn of Justice, yeah.
I have never seen any of those Superman movies. I've not seen Man of Steel. I've seen the Snyder Cut.
Isn't Man of Steel the one where they create a new continent in the middle of the Atlantic made of kryptonite?
No, that was Superman Returns.
Yeah, that's
Lex Kevin Luthor's. Spacey. Yeah,
yeah,
big plan there.
This is Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice, which is the
because Man of Steel, then Batman versus Superman, and then Justice League.
No, there's one more. There's Man of Steel, then Batman versus Superman, and then.
Speaking of which, Justice League and that whole thing. One of the screenwriters on this movie was Joss Whedon.
He was.
Who apparently, back in the day, he said that his assignment was to follow around Kevin Costner for several weeks and just take notes on whatever he said and turn that into a script. And at the time, one of the most annoying things about Joss Whedon, there have since been many, many, many more things added to that list. But at the time, one of the things was anytime he wrote a bad script or was involved in a bad movie like this, an Alien Resurrection, his response would be, oh, well, they just said my lines wrong. It's like, dude, no. Come on.
I thought he was real known for real quippy dialogue, and I don't think there's very many quips in this movie.
No, there's not.
There's no jokes. The thing about Joss Whedon is, in some ways, he created what a superhero in this generation is, because you're right. It is quippy. It's a lot of tongue-in-cheek, like, well, that happened.
It's a lot of self-awareness, because, yeah, but at the same time, the crushing burden of heroism and stuff like that. But
well, and to your point, the problem is the pacing of this is so weird that when it does make a joke, it doesn't feel right. Like, for example, there's that dude who's literally is in the credits. He's the depth gauge. He just talks about how high and low the gasoline is, right?
He's that slave in the oil tanker.
And then
right?
When it catches fire, his line is, "Oh, thank God."
That's a Joss Whedon line.
That's right? A joke, but it's the only joke for the last 15 minutes. So you're just like, it's almost vaguely uncomfortable.
Hey, that's actually. Do you think Joss Whedon wrote Gentleman Guppy? Because Deacon is so racist towards the Mariner. Like, well, here comes Gentleman Guppy.
It wouldn't surprise me.
And then there's, oh, golly gee, a single tear rolled down my cheek.
Well, that sounds more Joss Whedon-y. The other joke sounds like there was another joke there, and then Hopper riffed.
There was like seven people. I think J.J. Abrams helped write the script.
Oh, it's this is what you'd call a debacle picture.
Actually, I should look this up now. Who all was involved writing this damn thing? Okay, so we had loading. Okay, on IMDb, there's only two people credited: David Tui and Peter Rader.
Which David means Tui. That name sounds familiar.
I will also say too, while you're looking this up, part of the problem is you can tell that Hopper may or may not have read the script, but if there was a battle of egos on set, it was between him and Costner, because they clearly were both, like, Costner claims the script, and so it's my script, my God, blah, 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 blah. Hopper was doing what he wanted, including a very stupid line which stuck out like a red, like, I just was like, no, he didn't. But he goes, you know, I thought you were stupid, friend, but I underestimated you. You're a total freaking R word. And then he laughs at him, and I'm just like, who? What the fuck is this for? I hate when...
Is that when the Mariner walks up in front of him?
Yes.
And then he goes,
I want the girl.
And he's holding the flare.
Right. And he threatens to drop it into the gas tank, right? It's the same thing we just talked about. But, like, to me, that's just... If you're going to use names and profanity in your dystopian future movie, you either have to always be in the, we're elbowing the 1990s, or never do it. And calling someone, again, I'm not going to say the R word, but 500 years later doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense at all, especially in a world where people are called the Mariner, the Deacon, the Depth Gauge. Like, you're not, it just, all of it seems so incredibly, like, contrived. Like, so dumb. This is such a dumb movie. That they spent $240 million, they spent $250 million in Bill Clinton bucks to make. Like,
oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
even so, there, I feel like I want to try and defend this from like the worst of the worst criticisms, because there's a lot dumber out there. There really is.
If this movie had been made for $80 million, it would have been totally fine. Like,
yeah.
Because it's not bad.
If it had been a 100-minute movie that was made for like $50 million in Clinton bucks.
And if it was made
fine.
If it was a Cameron production where it was made on a soundstage using special effects instead of this practical effects nonsense, which, as Matt brought up earlier, almost doubled the budget because it washed away.
Yeah, they built a floating city.
Right, like if instead
twice
you do the full Truman Show and you like make it in the soundstage with a fake sun, here's the thing: it costs less money. It's the same plot and it's fine. But instead, you nearly bankrupt Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're the reason why Universal Studios theme parks nearly go away. Right, you destroy for this vanity project that no one cares about.
Well, let's get into another. Let's get into another element and scene in this movie about how it simultaneously is interesting, but at the same time doesn't work. And that's the scene we've hinted at it with after Jean Triplehorn, I think is the actress's name, and Enola get on his ship. Jean Triplehorn?
She's the barmaid at the bar where they drink hydro.
And she was a friend of whoever built the dirigible and felt that that would be the way off this land, but that didn't work out because he had the whole Wizard of Oz knows, I can't come back, I don't know how it works, goodbye everybody.
She is way too prissy for a barmaid in this floating hive of scum.
Plus we see her butt.
We do see her butt.
I think it was a body double.
That's fine.
We see the character's butt.
We see one butt. But what I was going to say is, when the smokers arrive and Kevin Costner's...
Is the little girl her daughter?
No, she is not.
No,
that makes him even more of a bigger dickhead. He's like, yeah, we're going to Thailand. I'm chucking that kid off the boat because he thinks that's her daughter.
Well, because she was drawing chalk graffiti on his ship
with his precious expensive crayons,
mm-hmm.
which in turn leads to the non-consensual haircut,
yes.
which is played for laughs.
I don't think it's played for laughs.
It's not played for laughs.
Well, the way it's cut to, he just looks at her and then cut to her with the short hair is.
It's unintentionally funny.
When he goes at Triplehorn with the kukri, that's played for, wow, he's an asshole.
Well, I think it's played for laughs. I think it's supposed to be really terrifying.
Anyway.
So what happens is the smokers show up as Kevin Costner is drowning in this pit. And the whole point is she is trying to. Jean Triplehorn, he had already been at the hydro, that kind of thing, right? He's starting to drown in sewage.
Yeah, right? Let's just say sewage.
And as the dirigible flies away, Triplehorn and the girl see him drowning and decide to save him and essentially tell him, I'll save you, but you're taking us with you.
Because again, the bitchin' catamaran.
Right. A trimaran. It's a trimaran.
Okay.
But the whole nature of the ship is that she doesn't really like him. He doesn't like her. But damn it, we're going to figure this out together, I guess. Though there's no reason for him to help her, really, other than she saves him. I would have just left it afloat because she is literally the worst character in this movie.
And Helen and Enola are so prissy despite having grown up in this nasty environment where they're starting to inbreed and it's full of criminals.
Also,
and the Mariner is such a surly bachelor asshole.
How can Enola not swim? It's Waterworld. At no point in time did anybody bother to rig up some flotation device and teach her, okay, here's how you're going to survive into adulthood.
I mean, and also, God, she is the most precocious kid.
Yeah, I definitely got some 90s precocious kid vibes off her. Although that the scene where she's telling what the horrible things a Mariner will do to them in a montage of the Mariner going through the smokers like a chainsaw, I did like that.
The action scenes in this movie, especially that attack on the atoll, are very good.
Oh, I mean,
but it feels more like a stunt show. It feels like more of a stunt reel.
Speaking of stunt show, there is a stunt show.
Oh, I know. It's the at Universal. It was a big deal for a while.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I think it actually continues the story. You have?
Well, I did. It's no longer there.
I heard it was like in Universal Asia, some of those Asian parks.
No, for a while there was one at Universal Florida. I just don't think it's there anymore.
Nick, are you saying that the Waterworld stunt show is not a myth? You have seen it?
That's a well good
done.
One.
Well done. Speaking of, I have one of her lines here, which I think is the one you're talking about. He doesn't have a name, so death can't find him. He doesn't have a home or people to care for. He's not afraid of anything, men least of all.
So, see, this is how you describe Clint Eastwood's character in the Dollars trilogy after a massive head wound.
This is also...
And the kid is saying that to Dennis Hopper, or Evil Mullet, mm-hmm. while the Mariner is going through the Exxon Valdez... garroting people with chains and cutting them up with his
Kukri. Or one of the pedophiles who handcuffs her to a support beam.
I think that was Mullet.
That's the scene I initially wanted to talk about, is the scene with the other scavenger who's trying to buy his way into having sex with Jean Triplehorn. I forget her character's name. Does she have
Helen.
A name? Helen and Enola.
Are we talking about the Irish spaz boy?
Yes, we're talking about the Irish eccentric Irish individual. I'm not going to use the S word no. At this point. But
any of y'all seen Trainspotting?
Oh yeah, sure. I saw it once.
Isn't there a character named Begbie who's a total nut job?
Yes.
How much is that Begbie?
Was it the same actor?
No, not the same actor. It's the same personality type because he's a nut.
I mean, that's the thing though. It's like
he's a tweaker for sure.
This is an interesting idea. But within the context of the movie, how does it work? Like, how do Irish accents still exist? There's no Ireland.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the other thing. Like, you either need to make this movie 20% smarter or just go full canon where none of it matters. Because if you have 600 people who have lines in this movie and only one has an accent, it's very strange.
And also, why are some of these things so... Well, I guess that's meant to be some sort of subtle commentary because I could easily just ask... Why are jewels so valuable? It's like, why is paper and dirt so valuable when it's useless? Because apparently this movie's meant to be smarter.
Well, I mean, and you didn't even mention this, but the Irishman's aboard because he has a bunch of paper.
We find the National Geographic later, but
in the water, whatever. But he has like maps or something. And Jean Triplehorn offers to be railed in exchange for letting him see the paper while it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's it. And then, you know, he decides earlier. And by the way, we alluded to this earlier. His name was supposed to be Ulysses, and that's why she's Helen.
Right. Right? Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
See, it's a smart movie.
Well, kind of.
They tried.
I want to know what the script was. Like...
Well, then if they really wanted... See, this would have been the perfect tweak to make this just that much dumber that would have worked. Name her Penelope.
Exactly. Just do it. Because it's one of those things... It's like when you watch Your Brother, Where Art Thou? Mm-hmm. If you don't know that it's the Odyssey, it's a good movie. Yeah. But if you do, you're like, oh, he's the Cyclops. Right. Oh, right. Like he's
the Sirens.
Yep. Because then when Delmar says, them Sirens done sexed him up, it makes sense. But if you knew it all along, you're like, oh, of course they're the Sirens. That works.
Didn't the Coen brothers say they'd never read the Odyssey before they wrote that movie?
That's what they said later. I love it. I'm showing it in class next week. It's one of my favorite.
Oh, sure.
We're talking about the Great Depression. Like, how else you do it? Like, it's so good. Anyway, but this movie is just, it's all over the place, man. Like, and instead of the Deacon, you could have done anything.
There could have been any number of antagonists in this movie, and it didn't even have to be him, because in the theatrical version, they never explain why he cares so much about dry land.
They keep talking, the version I saw had to be the theatrical version, because it reminds of what I remember very well, and it sounds like he's like, it's the mother load, like he just thinks it's got more oil or something.
The version I saw was the version that was being offered by Delta Airlines. I was on a flight at the time, so...
God, could you imagine being on a plane in Waterworld? No.
There is a plane in Waterworld.
Well, it's the thing that Jack Black was flying.
Which is, it's just, when I saw him in that plane, I was like, first of all, the guy who gets pulled out and killed should have been Kyle Gass. And then second.
there you go.
But I mean, like, that's again, Jean Triplehorn fires a harpoon at a plane and destroys half of the trimaran. Like, it's just.
I'm pretty sure that's what got her hair half hacked off.
Yeah, because Mariner just straight up loses it, takes out a Kukri, and you think he's going to kill her, and he instead cuts her hair off. And that was played like a straight up murder scene.
The entire time, though, I was wondering, okay, why does he care so much about... Why does anybody care so much about finding dry land at this point? I mean, it's 500 years in the future. Wouldn't you care more about if fresh water is a commodity, finding fresh water?
Well, but that's maybe people are starting to die out.
Well, but my point is, I think Daniel's point is too, pick one or the other.
Yeah.
Like, this movie is already overstuffed. We have to learn the difference between the Crips and the Bloods and who's in charge and why does he all of a sudden look like a super, like a Street Fighter villain? I don't even remember where he lost his eye.
It's in the attack on the atoll.
There was that explosion and...
Oh, so it was just during the... Okay.
Yeah.
And there's that scene where all of a sudden he gets an anime eye, glass eye thing.
And no one is willing to tell him how much it sucks until this one kid's like, it looks like shit.
They could have completely lost that scene and nothing
and
would
then
have
he's
changed.
Like, it looks like shit and feels like cold shit. And he just whips it out of his own head and it goes
from the mouth of babes.
And it goes bouncing around like a marble.
But I mean, like, so...
Dennis Hopper played one of the greatest cinematic villains ever, and that's Frank Booth in Blue Velvet. So he can do it well, but through the entire 90s, he was just sleepwalking or something. We got this and Super Mario Brothers, and well, Speed was good, but...
What's the guy? Oh, God, fuck.
Dennis Hopper is having so much fun in this movie. I liked it.
I have nothing wrong with Dennis Hopper's performance.
He can do a lot better.
He ate the scenery and it was rusty.
Could you imagine if Samuel L. Jackson had been it instead of Dennis Hopper? Yo, bitch, where's dry lead? I'm asking you for the final time, where the fuck is dry lead?
Actually, you know what would have been good? If Samuel L. Jackson was Mulletman instead. Two of them. Like, that would have been great. He goes,
yeah.
Now, you know, I'm looking for the land. He goes, he's looking for the fucking land.
He is going to find that motherfucker, and when he does, your ass is shit.
If he was Hopper's Flavor Flav, like, oh, shit, Hopper coming. The deacon is going to fuck you.
That is a brilliant idea, because Mullet Man isn't really impressive, but Samuel L. Jackson in full mode as Mullet Man, that would be... awesome.
Well, I mean, it's either that or you go the other direction and make it Chris Kattan, just some like horny little like.
Oh boy! Well, this was a little. Well, no, this was right about the time
David
we
Spade,
learned about you, Chris Kattan.
You just need something, because otherwise, Mullet Man is nothing, and Hopper is just again the man has all the iron he ever needs from eating the scenery of this ship. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The rest of this movie truly does not matter.
Yeah,
girl has on her back. They keep saying it's a map. It's not a map. It's a shitty tattoo that a drunk tourist gets in Thailand, not because they can't read the language. And then all of a sudden, sticking his head underwater, I assume looking for krill. Kevin Costner sees an old National Geographic that has the image of this waterfall thing on it.
And a palm tree, and she's like been drawing it, and it's like, oh shit, how does she know what these things are? Dry land... must exist, even though that line I was alluding to earlier never actually happens in the movie.
Right.
Yeah, I have in my Twitter commentary, at Matthew W. Quinn, you can see what movies we're watching about a month out. Like, he's going to believe now.
Well, but the other thing, too, is we did Splash, right? And we were saying how much this is The Little Mermaid. This is The Little Mermaid in reverse, because he has these, like, knickknacks that he wears around his neck, including a piece of green chalk or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, if Daddy tries to break his knickknack, he'll take a kukri to him.
But, first of all, A, it's his fucking shit, and you're hijacking him.
Yeah.
But B, how the fuck is any of this? Like, if you put a crayon in water for... a day, I bet you it starts to break down. The idea that this Crayola existed 500 years later and
skyline of Denver, Colorado exists underwater for 500 years.
With a submarine in the street.
Which happens in this movie is ridiculous.
Hey, Kevin, I know where you can save some fucking money. Who gives a shit? I'm sorry. If you showed me that he was just on a boat in the middle of nowhere, right? He dives down to get a fish, and when he pulls the fish up, it has like... a New York postcard in its mouth or something. First of all, equally impossible. But I get it. The world has flooded. You don't need like, let's go swim to see how Colorado is doing. And Detroit, guess what? Denver, Mile High City. And it's underwater.
Yeah, and this is some sort of either a combination of date or I'm going to destroy all your dreams from Kevin Costner to Helen.
In other words, it's a date.
Which I will say too, if you want to see what this movie is done, but better, Watch the episode of Futurama where they find the lost city of Atlanta.
You can see the Weston Tower in the background of that episode.
Oh, they do a great job. And it was, isn't it narrated by Beck? And he goes, and it was to become an even bigger Delta hub. And also Jane Fonda was there. Like, yeah. And the whole thing, like, just
it sinks. Has been a long time since I've seen that.
Oh, I know what I'm seeing when you guys leave. So that's that.
Oh, there you go. Well, I mean, that Denver scene is another thing, because that is an absolute by itself. If you were to, like, cut that out and put it on YouTube, it's a great scene. It's very well constructed. The effects are great. I mean,
it's
the acting's
properly.
Great.
It looks good.
Well, no, it's acted great, too, with Helen scared out of her mind and the Mariners' business as usual.
And he's dropping road flares, too, which is real clever, because once you get down deep in the ocean, it is dark.
No, it's very well thought out. It's a very well executed. It's a great scene on its own. It doesn't matter to the plot of this movie whatsoever.
There needs to be what is the documentary called? Art of Darkness?
Oh, Heart, the Apocalypse Now.
Because I just need to see what happened. I want to see a Where's My Jet-esque Netflix documentary about how they had to keep going back and asking for more money. I want to know what Kevin Costner was like on set. I imagine it's like Marlon Brando in the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Did you see that documentary?
Which one?
The one about the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what I'm thinking. I'm just like, I imagine he was like, and now I want this guy in the movie. Like, and he's walking around with someone carrying an umbrella and him eating constantly. I just... Because this movie, I've seen the final product. None of it makes sense. This movie feels like a fever dream, but it was made and it cost $250 million when at the time Microsoft was only worth $10 billion. So 1/40th of Microsoft went into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we got. I you think about it too hard and you get an aneurysm and die. So I have to know. There has to be a book somewhere about this, and it will happen on Kevin Costner's deathbed. And Joss Whedon will follow him around, and he'll narrate for 20 days.
Joss Whedon will follow him around carrying an umbrella.
Well, these days, I'm not too sure that Joss Whedon was just, oh, it's about, how old are you now, Enola? Let's wait a couple years.
That's
there.
Right. That's exactly right.
I honestly don't know what he's done. He just, from what I've heard, sounds like a deeply unpleasant individual.
Well, but that's why eventually he'll be to the point where he's taking narration from better rich people. Mm. As this movie, like, I guess, kind of comes together at the end, there's a video game built on it for the Virtual Boy, which tells you all you need to know.
Game Virtual over. Boy, that's a name I haven't heard in a
well,
long
you
time.
Well, you have to insert 40 quarters into it. You got to walk one plank up the dock, and then you get a game over and have to insert 40 more quarters. And if you were Milhouse Van Houten, then you would do it.
Well done. I will also say, Spielberg told them not to do it this way. Because he goes, you know, when we made Jaws, we filmed on open water, and it was a disaster.
Yeah.
And they ignored Steven Spielberg. And that's all you need to know. You don't ignore Steven fucking Spielberg. You're not.
Not at this point.
Kevin Costner, you are not better than Spielberg. The year he came back to filmmaking, right? Because after Jurassic Park and Schindler's List came out the same year, he took 94 off.
Yeah.
So that means on his year off, they asked him, so what do you think of this? And he said, it's a bad idea.
Don't do it. what did he do between then? He did the sequel to Jurassic Park, and then he did Saving Private Ryan, which is around the same time.
Right.
So Amistad.
He did, I think you got the order slightly out of it. I think it was Amistad, Lost World, and then Saving Private Ryan, which was 96, 97, 98.
Right.
Yeah. And so he comes back to filmmaking and goes, Kevin, don't do it. Other Kevin, listen to me. And then they ignored him, and it cost $250 million. I can't get over how much money.
You literally can't even, Nick.
Oh, my God. And then Hawaii was just like, yeah, just send us the money, white person. You're fine.
That's the thing about islands in the Pacific like that. It's like, we're the only people around. We're going to charge you whatever we want. So, like, catering and stuff, they would have to depend on Hawaiian caterers. And, okay, they're going to charge you an arm and a leg. Where else are you going to go?
Catch your own fish.
Well, and also, we didn't even get to it, but they started filming, like, just what I would imagine was B-roll, establishing shots, that kind of thing. And that's when they flew out Joss Whedon. So they had already started building the sets. They'd already started building set pieces. Then they flew out Joss. And then there was 7 weeks where he just had to follow him around and then update the script unedited.
I could have sworn that J.J. Abrams at some point wrote for this movie. I can't find any documentation on Google, but...
Well, that's because he wrote on every script between the years of 1993 and 2001.
Well, he was just waiting until Felicity got greenlit, so...
But I mean, like, you tell me that and I believe it automatically, because how many stories in the 90s appear that way? Unless it was a Tarantino or Kevin Smith script, he was probably a part of it. Like, that's the answer. Like, that's how it goes.
Should we talk about... Well, there's this one montage where the Mariner talks about... suddenly loves Helen and Enola. She gets kidnapped, and then he goes to rescue her on the ruins of... Is it the actual ruins of the Exxon Valdez?
Yeah, yes. It is. The smoker's base is the Exxon Valdez.
And, by the way, I was right. This set and this scenery ended up at Universal Studios Florida, and there were two versions of the Trimaran. The one that could actually move very quickly, which, if you watch... they changed the establishing shot because it was an actual boat that could actually go. And then there's a shitty one that they used for the up-close sets because it looks more run down. The actual one that could sail was used in Universal Florida for a stunt show in the lake where you could see in the background was Bruce, the shark from Jaws. So the actual boat was there until 2012. So you could see it there. And
jeez, we missed it by 2 years.
And then Kevin Reynolds, the director, quit the set over a disagreement with Kevin Costner, who finished the movie.
Of course he did.
But they gave Reynolds credit in case it was a bomb, so it would hurt him and not Costner's score. So,
well, let's see what Kevin Reynolds has done since this came out.
Passion of the Christ 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Built a giant voodoo doll of Kevin Costner and pierced it with nails.
Well, this was their second movie together, so he knew what he was getting into, so he can go fuck himself.
Okay, who is Kevin Reynolds?
Guy who directed Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
He's the guy who directed that Count of Monte Cristo movie that came out right after 9/11, starring Jim Caviezel.
Okay, so he is a real person.
You know what? I saw that back in the day. I remember really liking that movie.
I think it's fine.
Nothing like the novel at all.
No, it reminds me more of that... what was that movie where what's-his-name wrote stuff in shit? That doesn't matter. My brain just completely died. He also did that version of Tristan and Isolde that came out in 2006.
Okay, so since Waterworld, you're right. He did he did the movie 187 that's got Samuel L. Jackson in it about him as a high school teacher with...
Oh, right.
The
that movie
gangsters.
Was pretty okay.
Yeah, it was pretty okay. He did The Count of Monte Cristo, like you said, which has a 7.7 on IMDb.
That's pretty good.
Tristan and Isolde, you're right. He actually got back together with Kevin Costner to do the Hatfield and McCoy show.
Yeah, I get a feeling that was more like an I'm sorry I did that to you kind of thing. He also did that Risen movie, which was a response to the Scorsese movie about the Jesuits in Japan.
Oh, Silence? Was that what
it was
called?
Yeah, it was Silence. Well, I mean, and it's not exactly the same, but it's like a vaguely religious movie that came out around the same time that's designed to evoke, like, the controversies of early Christianity, yada, yada, yada. It stars Joseph Fiennes, Tom Felton, Peter Firth, and Cliff Curtis, which just lets you know who he was dealing with in 2016. And it's also, he wanted to do a sequel to Passion of the Christ. We mentioned that earlier. And this is about...
well, Paul Verhoeven, I'm sure, wanted to do a sequel to The Passion of the Christ. There were a lot of...
yeah, it's called RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only.
Paul Verhoeven is one of my secretly favorite directors of
sure.
all time.
He's How can you hate the dude?
Oh, I love that. I love RoboCop. I love Starship Troopers. I love... We what was the one we did recently? I almost said Thinner. It's not Thinner. It's Shallow Hal. No, it's
no, he
the one with Kevin Bacon. That's
Hollow Man.
Hollow Man is the one we did.
Oh yeah, Kevin's Bacon,
which is a terrible movie, but
it's not good. But
the effects were good.
The direction is fine. It's just everything about it doesn't make sense. It's such a weird, like, you know what the Invisible Man would do? Rape a lot of people, which
and terrify children with his missing eyes.
Sure, I mean he would. It's not a movie though. That is a bad pornography film. Water World, which is also kind of a bad pornography film.
So there's like a 40-minute, it felt 40 minutes anyway, final battle between, on the Exxon Valdez, between the Mariner and everyone else that was on that ship, all
because
the smokers.
He's also secretly God.
Yes,
also,
of course.
If I may, Matt, you might appreciate this. What's the reviewer with the mustache and the huge hair that's like 200 years old?
Joe Bob Briggs?
Gene Shalit.
Gene Shalit.
Gene Shalit called this fish tar.
Oh.
That's well, a good one.
And Leonard Maltin called this Kevin's Gate.
Oh, even better. Well, Gene Shalit sucks anyway. He was always a terrible critic.
Those are brilliant.
I mean, I don't hate Gene Shalit. I don't like Gene Shalit. I ignore Gene Shalit. But... I like Leonard Maltin, and I like, of course, Roger Ebert, but just
he was,
fish tar tickled me to no end.
I remember Ebert being a little kinder to this movie. I think he gave it 2.5 stars.
Yeah, he gave it 2.5 out of 4, which is, I'd say, about where I would give it. I don't hate this. To me, it's more like, for this amount of money, you could have made it, its sequel, and its third, and they would have all been just as good. But this movie... Again, credit where credit's due, practical effects, and they just throw people at it. And to that end, before I summarize this, my opinion, this is where that money goes. We have this big, speaking of Heaven's Gate, it's like a Jim Jones-esque speech, right? Where he's like, now I haven't given you the land yet, but I have a map, we're going there, and I will take you to the promised land.
Jim Jones is the deacon in this movie. You know what? Better idea.
It kind of is. They'd be smoking weed and not ancient cigarettes, wouldn't they?
First of all, Deacon would be taking a hell of a lot of amphetamines. Jim Jones was not a weed guy. He was an amphetamines guy. That's why he would talk for 70 hours at a time. Mm. I just finished the book, Road to Jonestown. Incredible book. Read it. Mm-hmm. Up, down, heads, like, awesome. Awesome. But not the guy, just the story. Moving on. So the apocalypse is coming, and they're close. We're so close to dry land. I have this child that's I've locked up in my room for no reason.
Yeah, he's quoting the Bible. He shows everyone Enola, and a child shall lead them.
Well, because he said he had a dream, right? He's a prophet now. That's why they call him the deacon. And then all of a sudden, he's like, now prepare to land, boys. And so they clear the deck. And on the deck of this massive super tanker... All of a sudden, we have the postman show up.
After he's killed a crap ton of smokers.
That's right. And so this end master, I don't even know how to get to it. Like, shot. Yeah,
the deacon is like, you're not crazy enough to do that. And so Kevin Costner just drops a flare into the Exxon Valdez guts and blows up the ship.
And that's where the oh, thank God bit comes that we mentioned earlier. But then from there... Picture any generic action scene from the 90s. It's pretty much that.
Yeah,
there's some more jet skis.
Yeah, they're fighting on the ship as it burns, and Mullet Man gets it with a crossbow, and Deacon tries to take Enola off on the plane, and then Kevin Costner brings down the plane with a zip line, and insanity ensues.
Well, there's a scene where the Deacon's climbing up on the dirigible because that guy shows up again on his little flying machine.
Well, and that's when you realize, oh, shit, there's 30 minutes left of this goddamn movie.
Yeah.
I was...
Prepare to suffer exquisitely, Nick.
I was... No, and again, like, this is... Like, if you have the Lucario guy from Mario Brothers show up, he takes you to the fucking end of the movie. I don't know why we need 20 more minutes.
Well, they have to get to dry land.
Who gives a shit? They just should show up. I mean, oh my God, when this happened, I'm like, oh good, the movie's about to end. And I like paused it to go to the shitter. And I was like.
Which, by the way, exists in this universe because there's a line from the Deacon about.
Yeah, then they turned that into Taco Bell.
Well, he's like a turd that won't flush down. It's like, wait, toilets exist? Flushing toilets exist in Waterworld? Wouldn't you just go over the side of whatever boat you're on?
This is just one of those movies where you're just like, and here it ends, and you're like, oh wait, there's another act? Like, holy hell, and then it becomes Around the World in 80 Days, and I could not even close to be bothered with this. And then they're bickering on the goddamn, like, And okay, and so Matt is Matt, who I'm literally looking at a book where a character is named something from a different era, and there's fucking dirigibles in it. But it, you're right; it is supposed to be a hot air balloon. And yet they drive it like it's a fucking dirigible, so I don't know what to tell you. This movie has no idea what's happening. Now, this is before steampunk, so people cared about that. But this movie is just, it's a goings-on.
The book he's referring to is called Serpent Sword, Battle for the Wastelands number 2, so check it out, please.
You plugged it at the beginning, and that's why I plugged it now.
Thank you.
You gotta remember, because we've been recording for like 90 minutes at this point.
This movie, this podcast will be as long as the movie.
Pour me some more liquor, Nick, if we want to go as long as this movie is.
Yeah, this is episode 400, which means we've gone through, what, 200 handles of whiskey to get through it?
Could be worse, could be 420.
There you go. Yeah, next time I'll have a gummy before we start. Anyway, so the end of this movie, after, like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? They land in the Himalayan basin, and it's the only thing above land. Which means we're all fucked. Which means humanity is doomed. Like, I don't know what to tell you. 90% of the population... Like, the animals on Earth have died. Fine. We're here.
Yeah, the Himalayas are now a jungle.
Yeah.
And there are horses, which Enola had drawn pictures of horses before. Clue.
Doesn't make sense. There aren't horses in the Himalayas.
Did we mention how the deacon dies in this, about how he gets dropped back into the ocean while two jet skis are coming at him and then everything explodes?
Yeah, so Enola is shot and she falls out of the
gondola.
Dirigible. And
so the Mariner...
Three dudes are racing to get her. The Mariner ties a bungee cord to his leg, jumps out of this thing, sproings her out. And again, this could be funny if Kevin Costner could smile, but he can't because he's not a human. And then he saves her right as everyone explodes. So all the bad guys on Earth are dead, which means 20% of the world's population is gone.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently in some extra material of some sort, they reference the atoll people have not seen another atoll in over a year. So humanity is dying.
Thank God they found some corpses, which apparently were her parents, which are perfectly bleached skulls, which luckily we can't see.
Oh, yeah. That's...
Anybody remember our previous episode, Danger Island? It's like that dead scientist.
That's right.
But she had a bit more meat on her.
Which I will say, luckily we can't see their ethnicity because all the writing is in Asian characters and this is the whitest girl that's ever existed. But they're... The few people who found dry land, and Kevin Costner is terrified because he's never been on dry land before, which all of them should be.
And in fact, Enola's like, don't worry, it's land sickness.
All of them should be uncomfortable, just because what they're doing is, if you've never been on a boat for several days, you get your sea legs, right? You either get used to the rocking of the land or you don't. But here's the thing. Everyone should be vaguely uncomfortable. That's an interesting idea, that humanity, which has lived on Earth for its entire existence, has to learn how to live back on Earth, which is how you finish your goddamn environmental message. We've destroyed the Earth. Now we have to relive how to be on it. And but they give up. They don't care.
And that was foreshadowing the Mariner is going to leave. And that scene is actually sad.
I think... Everyone involved is a good actor.
It's a fucking ripoff of Shane, is what it is. The big hero has to go back out into the sunset, and we know how much these days Kevin Costner fetishizes old westerns, so it kind of makes sense. But
you know what they should have done instead of Shane? I mean, or the Dollars trilogy, same thing. They should have done True Grit. He should have been wounded, and at the last moment, he saves the child. Right? Like, that is a more complete story. But you know what, Daniel? Sir, I think they wanted a fucking sequel.
Oh my God, a Waterworld sequel?
Dry
World.
The stunt show actually has a continuation story that Helen is going to collect people from other atolls to bring them to dry land, and the last smokers are hunting her.
Well, but I mean, that's the only reason why you keep him alive. Otherwise, you do the True Grit ending, which is... Because remember, earlier on, I will guess there was a version of the script where this happened, because he's shot. He's bleeding, which matters not at all after the first 70 seconds of that. He just stops bleeding and is fine. But if you haven't seen True Grit, either version, I think the Coen version is as good as the original Rooster Cogburn version. But the end, he does everything in his power to save the girl's life. That's an interesting end. Then the character has a fucking arc, as opposed to at the end, he's not a protagonist technically because he doesn't grow or change in any way.
Again, let's talk about the end of The Road Warrior, where Max stays basically the same character.
Well, I think
and it's the people around him that are supposed to grow. And how do they end Road Warrior? The last thing is the one they call Max. I never saw him again. He lives now only in me memories.
In the memories, right. But here's the thing.
Make it that sort of thing. Make the Mariner a mythological character, which they, I guess, tried to do in some of the extended material.
But it's Kevin Costner. He can't be forgotten.
Oh, good Lord.
And the Postman ends with them building a statue of him.
You know what? That statue is now in Kevin Costner's front yard. So I love baseball. I hate Major League Baseball. It's the same feeling that those of you who like soccer, who hate FIFA feel, right? But like every year there's one game played at the Field of Dreams in a cornfield somewhere. And that to me is the exact metaphor we're looking for here. Kevin Costner wants to be the world's greatest actor, but he won't fucking let you forget it.
Well, he also isn't really that good an actor. I mean,
he's
himself.
Well, and the problem is he was tragically born with charisma. And so when he walks on stage, you're like, oh, I bet you something interesting is going to happen to that guy because he's Kevin fucking Costner. But at the same time, he doesn't try. It's not like, and here, I'll give him credit. Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise also has the same charisma. But you know what Tom Cruise does? He fucking acts. He goes at it. He's like, you know what? I'm going to jump off of a building because I'm Tom fucking Cruise.
I'm going to go out of space. That's the next one.
And I got rid of my thetans and you should too.
He doesn't act, but he does do his own stunts and he does them well.
I would say he acted in Tropic Thunder.
That's
true.
Oh, Matt, do you have any final thoughts here?
I wish they hadn't had all their sets blown away so the movie about a third cheaper and would have made enough money to have a sequel, because I like this movie and I like this world it's set in. But we can't always get what we want. So I liked it. I'll defend it. If this was like the 2005 version of the show, we would. I'll see about getting this DVD that's got the hybrid awesome cut that has action and world building, or otherwise I'll just...
The Criterion.
A Criterion version. That'd be great.
Well,
Sudsy.
Arrow Video has released Waterworld, and I think their hybrid cut that Matt's talking about is still around. I saw that way back in the day, but I remember nothing about it. But anyway, how this stands on its own, we referenced him earlier. It's 2023, so this is the 10th anniversary of his passing. But I kind of agree with Ebert here in his review. It's one of those marginal pictures you're not unhappy to have seen but can't quite recommend. There are a lot of decent ideas here, but something's holding it back. And I can't quite pinpoint exactly what it is. But something's holding it back. There are just, the ideas never come together. And I wish they had, because if they had, this would have been a great movie. But they don't, so you're just left with a bunch of connect the dots without any lines between them.
I'm going to recommend this, and I will say it's because, how do I put this? Nowadays, there's essentially three kinds of movies. There's studio movies, there's indie movies, and there's Oscar bait movies. And so everything is either